You are listening to the Experience Points Podcast for the week of November 4th, 2015, and this week I've returned from the magic kingdom of video games.
Welcome back to the Experience Points Podcast. I'm George Alvor.
My name's Scott Juster.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, our little villa where we talk about video games. today we're talking about, it's kind of like a real-life video game. Scott just came back from Disneyland.
I did.
And if we are talking about one simulacrum, then we might as well talk about another. So we thought we would talk a little bit about what Disneyland is like from your experience.
I was thinking about lots of video games when I was in Disneyland.
It makes sense, right? Like, Disneyland is the quintessential designed landscape.
Yes, it is.
It is all these tiny little areas meant purely for the sense of, like, a curated walking, riding experience. So very much like video games. In between the announcement and now, we've been looking at the map of Disneyland.
Yes.
I haven't been to Disneyland since I was 15,
yeah.
I want to say.
Which is probably before all this Downtown Disney stuff.
I mean,
happened.
All the stuff that you're showing me seems totally new. I don't remember. I don't think I ever went to California Adventures as a kid. If you're not familiar with Disneyland, there's not only the original Disneyland park with all of the cartoon characters and whatnot, but you also have California Adventures, which is its own separate park that you have to pay a separate admission fee for that is built around aspects of California, in addition to, it seems like, Disney Overflow.
Yes.
A Bug's Life in Cars is there.
Yep.
Why? Like, A Bug's Life in Cars aren't quintessentially Californian or anything.
Yeah, there was some talk early on that California Adventure was underperforming, and so I think that it was smart of them to start putting super popular franchises like Cars in California Adventure.
So do you think that when people go to Disneyland, I imagine there's a big deal, right? You buy passes to both, you get
what
a huge
we bought
discount.
Was like a two-day two-park pass. Like, you can go in between the parks however many times you want for 2 days.
Okay. Can I ask how much that was?
I mean, it's not, like, a secret. I think tickets... I think park hopper passes are, like, $100.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. <it's
laughs> That's a lot of money.
It kind of is.
I mean, to be fair, I have no idea what the going rate for a, like, park experience is.
I mean, but that's the other thing, right? Like, is kind of a lot of money, but in a way I feel like they could probably charge a lot more and people would still go.
Yeah, you're right. That's definitely true. I don't like rides, so I'm not one to go to parks anyway, because for me that seems to be the major reason people go to these types of events. I also find, like, weird seeing simulacrums like this extremely tacky and like, I find it viscerally unsettling.
I was thinking about, I mean, The main thing that strikes me, and the main thing why I kept on thinking about video games, is that it is just a simulation of a real world thing with the edges smoothed off. It's like, we don't really want to make you go 100 miles between San Francisco Land and Monterey Land or whatever.
Right.
You know, we don't want to have you...
Which we've done.
Right, well, we have. And it's like, ugh, it sucks. There's traffic.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's a lot of human traffic in Disneyland. Tell you that. Oh, man, the strollers. God, the strollers. But there are, especially in the traditional, like, Disneyland park, there's like, it's actually a fairly compact, you know, you can walk from one side of the park to the other in a few minutes. But it's set up in such a way that when you're in each region, you feel pretty much like you're wholly in that region.
Right.
Which makes me think a lot about especially open world games that we talk about, because you can't possibly effectively simulate the entire LA region. You have to shrink it down and you have to kind of scale certain things in a way that make it seem big, but it still is not going to take you an hour to get across town in GTA 5.
Right. Totally.
Yeah.
I mean, the landscape of GTA 5 is big. It's one of the biggest open world games available, but it's still, it can feel like discrete locations, right? That are, like, relatively small compared to real life, because you don't want to travel that far. Does it break the, like, I find it interesting in GTA when you're in an airplane and you see downtown, Los Angeles in the version of GTA, and then you see like the long distance version of GTA Land, which is like the desert boondocks past the mountains and whatnot. To me, that doesn't seem to break the illusion. Even though it's a smaller area, I don't get the sense like, oh, this is clearly fake because look at how close the mountains are, right? Do you feel like it breaks the illusion when you're in Disneyland, when you're in like the Cars area and you crest a hill and then you see that like spooky elevator ride or whatever? Yeah.
I mean, it's this double thing that they want to do, which is they want to give you a sense of like belonging in just one place, but they also want to give you a peek at like how big or how cohesive the place is overall.
They want to tease it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, oh, you can always see, like in Disneyland, this you can like, always see the Matterhorn.
Yeah, so it's like that part in like when you're playing Batman and it's like, oh, you're not ready to come to this area of the city yet. Turn your car around. The bridge is down still. You have to unlock some stuff.
So like in Disneyland, you can always see the mountain. Not always, but in most areas, like, you have a pretty clear view of, like, the Matterhorn.
I mean, do you think that's partly just for navigation purposes as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's
like, oh, well, we're west of the Matterhorn, so we need to go meet our cousins over at Astro Orbiter or whatever.
Yep, precisely. And it's, like, a good way of, like, orienting people and also giving people that same sense that they're in their own little... They're in a whole new world because you're not really, you can feel like you're getting lost without ever getting lost. Eventually Disneyland is set up in like a massive set of circles. Like you can tell this whole thing is like a set of circles, right?
Yeah.
So like,
we're looking at the map on Google Maps,
which is also fascinating because Google Maps has also mapped Disneyland. So it's like Fantasyland is a part in Google Maps.
That's so fucking weird. You know? That's kind of creepy. The Tom Sawyer's Island.
Yeah, Tom Sawyer. I don't know.
Do they talk about racism?
No. Okay, Disneyland was made in the 50s and 60s when racism didn't exist.
Did not exist back then. Yeah. Little known fact. So we're looking at a map. Maps are a big part of open world games as well. Do they give you a map when you get into Disneyland? Is it a useful map?
Yeah, so that's actually...
Do they have an app?
Yes.
That uses GPS.
I wanted to talk about that specifically.
Really? So now, okay.
I had not been to Disneyland.
I'm glad I predicted the existence of it. I guess that's not hard these days.
I had not been to Disneyland since the advent of smartphones.
Okay.
And so this was like this was something that I was really looking forward to seeing how they integrate the fact that everyone has a GPS tracker on them. So you have a paper map, which is kind of, that in and of itself is... that in of itself is kind of a trope. Like, it's like, oh, it's a crazy dad with his goofy hat and his fanny pack, and he's, like, trying to fumble with the Disneyland map. Like, that's, like, a long-standing thing. The new thing is that there is an app. It is, I think they're using the Google API for it. It kind of feels like the Google system. It does pinpoint you in the park.
Okay. So can you set waypoints?
You cannot, not that I know
fucking of. Bullshit app. Send you it back. Disneyland, you suck.
You can reserve... food, you can make restaurant reservations inside the park.
Okay. Does it send you missions in the form of push notifications?
So that's the big thing that I want to talk about, because I feel like...
Do you have any app on you? Can I look at this?
I can download it while we talk. But I think one of the things that was most shocking to me was I feel like Disneyland is actually... quite far behind the technological curve.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because we've talked on the podcast before about the way video games have fed into football and other various things like that, where the way that we watch football today is in many ways influenced by the rise of video games in the 80s and 90s. Now, video games owe a lot to Disneyland because Disneyland has always been a heavily curated experience. I mean, it's really... The sort of, you go to Disneyland and you sort of realize the way that design and optical illusions and architecture and pathing are fundamental parts of both of those experiences.
Yeah.
Now, it's a fundamental part of just navigating your own neighborhood, right? Mm. The way that we walk around and footpaths and how we get from point A to point B, all of those are designed experiences from an architectural perspective, which of course have a foundation in video games as well. But when you are put into a place that is so fake with so many like diversions and tightly packed curated experiences like that, it's almost easier to realize it. But what you're saying is it doesn't feel like video games have had the influence on Disneyland that you would expect them to have as of today. Now, another weird thing I also noticed, there are a bunch of video games for Star Wars and Disney properties. Did it, besides the app experience, did it feel like video games had a presence there?
That's another one of the things that I felt like was kind of behind the times.
Okay.
So there are definitely, like, I saw Disney Infinity shit in a lot of the gift shops. They were, like,
selling toys and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, importantly, that's a gift shop experience, right? They're selling anything Disney branded. But there's not a Disney Infinity ride. There's not Disney Infinity, like, diorama.
Because the point of Disney Infinity is to kind of simulate the idea of Disneyland, like a mashup of a bunch of things.
Yeah, but
and it hasn't quite fed in on itself
but
yet.
But Disneyland, they're still discrete locations, right?
Like that
the
is
Star
true.
Wars area is separate from the Mickey Mouse area.
Yeah.
But you look at fucking Kingdom Hearts, Mickey Mouse is rolling around with Squall and Sephiroth and
It is kind of funny how they're somewhat careful, but like, so if Mickey ever shows up in Adventureland or
like
something.
Like the guy who's inside a Mickey costume.
Yeah.
He's fired.
According to Hana, apparently, mostly women.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If Mickey ever shows up,
he hit on more.
He will be in Frontier.
By the way, you are literally the worst person if you are hitting on someone dressed like Mickey Mouse.
Oh, yeah.
In hopes there's a female inside.
Yeah, I mean, that takes the furries to a whole new level.
A whole nother level.
You know, if you were there, if Mickey's in Fantasyland, or if he's in Adventureland.
And there are multiple Mickeys roaming the park at any given moment.
Not really, because one of the strictest parts about Disneyland is nothing should break continuity, basically.
Right.
So Mickey should not be in two places at once, because there's only one Mickey Mouse.
Hey, to be fair, that's something that even video games can't do a very good job.
Well, it's one of those things where, you know, like the radial quest system in Skyrim. Like, why am I seeing two of the same villager 20 minutes away from each other, and they're both asking me different things? You know, like, right. That should never happen, basically.
Yeah. I mean, the whole arrow to the knee thing, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There should only be one guy who's taken an arrow to the knee.
Well, I mean, and in Disneyland, there are, you know, we walked through the parking lot to get to Disneyland, and at a certain point, there's signs that say, because part of the parking lot is for employees, and there are signs that say, you are now on stage. And so there is a division between what is considered on stage and what is considered backstage.
Right, so you cross a boundary,
and they know
you are now crossing into the fictional realm that must not break the illusion.
Precisely.
Interesting.
And so everything in the park is designed such that it is very hard to see the seams. It's like, Han and I actually walked up a place where we shouldn't have been, but in New Orleans Square, and we were able to see the back of some of the buildings.
Yeah.
And it's just a bunch of like weird construction material and cardboard and stuff. Like, it's a complete illusion. But from the front, it looks like a fully realized, you know, old mansion from New Orleans or something.
Right.
And so there is a bunch of places kind of, they call it backstage, like behind this area. Like if you're looking at Tomorrowland here, back here is a bunch of like loading docks and secret doors so that like there are underground tunnels so that if you are dressed up as Mickey, you can get from one area to the other without having to walk
through
the lands.
There's like a
whole
network of secret pipes underneath Disneyland?
Totally, yeah.
Holy shit.
So I mean, like, there are ways to go around under the park that are meant to not break the illusion of what's going on inside any discrete land.
Man. So this is not unlike going to areas where there's an invisible wall.
Yep.
Or a door that doesn't open.
Well, and it's kind of the new generation of like, we're no longer like Halo. We're no longer seeing invisible walls. We're seeing things that are sloped up too high to get up.
Yep.
Or we're seeing rubble that's strewn about and you can't get through it.
Yeah.
All of that is just another way of doing an invisible wall. And Disney does the same thing. It's like over here, there will be like trees that block the path. Or like in Tom Sawyer's Island, there's only a very specific way to get across the river.
Right.
Like, you know, so it makes it look like everything is contiguous when in reality, there are like harsh markers in between areas.
Well, this reminds me of games, though, that intentionally break that fourth wall, right? Like Saints Row.
Yep.
that calls, like, points out the fact that, hey, you're in a curated world. Yep. Right?
Yeah.
Do you think that you could create a section of Disneyland that's like self-aware land and it's like a mini Disneyland within Disneyland where you could see the seams and sort of play around with the seams?
They do that a little bit in some of the, like, kind of Main Street areas where they have the historical exhibits, mm-hmm. where they're like, you know,
like the Hollywoodland in California Adventure, right? Like, how do you talk about Hollywood without talking about how Hollywood itself is a constructed experience?
Well, and in the Hollywoodland is even funnier because there are like huge, you know, murals and dioramas of like, you know, cameras and set construction equipment and stuff, mm-hmm. but it's all there. It's all meant to be, a constructed set. Yes. You're not actually looking at something under construction.
Oh my God. See, this is like next level shit. Yeah. It's like, it is a construction of a construction,
yeah.
to give you the illusion you're on a set when really you're not on a set. You're on a very heavily curated set.
Exactly.
Like, not even the set is real.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So, I mean, the thing that impresses me, though, and that reminds me of things like Red Dead Redemption, is that they have to be really careful in Disneyland about how they transition from one place to the other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're looking at the map when you walk into Disneyland, you're on Main Street, USA, and it's meant to seem like some kind of, like, you know, small town America from the 50s, right. when everything was great.
This is what every president represents.
Exactly,
during the,
yeah.
debates.
This is small town America. Just to the side of small town America, or Main Street America, is like where the edge of the jungle area is, Adventureland.
Right. But that would be a very bizarre experience.
If you saw something poking out.
Like a fucking monkey or,
yeah.
something.
Yeah. Well, there are animatronic hippos and giraffes and stuff, you know, not 100 feet away from Main Street, USA.
Right.
But in order to get to Adventureland, you have to walk completely through Main Street to the circle. You know, while you're on Main Street, there are hidden speakers around that are piping in music,
mm-hmm.
and the buildings are constructed in such a way that you can't see over them to the next land, right. and you have to go through a kind of a gate, and then all of a sudden the music and the speakers are positioned in such a way that Main Street kind of fades away, and then
slowly.
All of a sudden, yeah, you start to hear like jungle noises, and you start to hear like you know, drums and stuff,
right.
like that.
Macaques.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you realize you're now surrounded by a bunch of things that look like tiki bars and stuff. And it's like, here's Indiana Jones and here's the Jungle Cruise or whatever.
Yeah.
And you're really only like a couple hundred feet away from where you first started.
Right.
But you have transitioned that into the next area.
Right.
And it's something in like Red Dead that I thought about a lot, where it's like, when you go up to the snow in Red Dead, you're not really that far away from the plains or the desert or even Mexico. You're like a,
right.
few minutes away.
Yeah.
But they have to transition you in such a way that the landscape gradually transitions.
Yeah.
But not too gradually, because then it'd get boring. But not too long, because, like, you know, I mean, short, or then there's like a hard cut, you know?
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of MMOs, because, yep. they also have those same musical cues.
Yes.
And it's funny in MMOs, because you could search for that weird breakage point where you're like, this is a little bit,
yep.
rough of a transition.
Yep.
Where like you can kind of hear, okay, I'm standing here, and then you move 2 feet over and,
yep.
now the music's slightly different,
yep.
right? Like, but you have to search that out, because generally game designers do a very good job, or,
yeah.
Imagineers,
yep.
do a very good job of creating that, like, that transition. So going back to Red Dead, though, Red Dead Redemption does feature a train that,
yep.
will take you throughout the land of Red Dead Redemption.
Now, so the does map Disneyland.
So does Disneyland.
Yeah.
Now the map of the train in Red Dead goes through a variety of tunnels, and I'm purely guessing from memory, but I imagine when you're moving from landscape to landscape, the game probably has tunnels before each to sort of wipe your memory of being in the plains,
yeah.
and now feel like you're transitioning into a mountainous area.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's a more gradual thing, I don't know.
Yeah.
Does the train in Disneyland have those same features? Like, how does the or does the train feel like an outside experience where you're sort of just viewing the whole landscape?
There are some... So there's actually two trains. So there's like a...
Of course there is.
There's like a locomotive-style train.
And then there's a Thomas the Train Engine.
There's that too, but that's actually a ride.
Okay.
There's also a monorail that goes from downtown Disney into Disneyland.
Okay.
Like this, we're looking at the map again. So the line that you are seeing right here is the monorail that takes you
around
into Tomorrowland.
Okay.
And it starts off in... It starts off in, no, there's literally Starbucks and shit in downtown Disney.
Right.
And so it starts in downtown Disney and kind of takes you in. And you can see, like, it takes you close to, like, the Rainforest Cafe, and here's the monorail station. Yeah. It just takes you around. There's also a train that is taking you around the perimeter of Disneyland. Hmm. And it's much more like the Red Dead experience, where there are multiple stops within Disneyland, and one of the stops is in New Orleans Squares right here. So, like, you stop in New Orleans Square, and it looks like a train station.
You might see
in the south, yeah, and you're right there next to Pirates of the Caribbean and the Haunted Mansion and all that.
Yeah.
And then there's one, you know, nearer to Tomorrowland, and it overlooks Space Mountain, and it overlooks the Star Wars crap. And so, but there are also tunnels where it will take you through little mini rides, like mini exhibits of, like, here's you're going through the dinosaur place, and like then you come out, and it's like, oh, I do remember the dinosaur
one.
And it's like, okay, well, we came from Tomorrowland, went through the dinosaurs, and now we're at Main Street USA again.
Right.
And so there's, like, those transition points where it's like that break that makes Tomorrowland feel even further away than it actually is.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
So then I have another question.
Yeah.
We've talked a lot about the way that these are all, like, designed experiences, but how much do you think is sort of like self-delusion?
Yeah.
Like, when you go into Disneyland, you're sort of priming yourself with what you expect from Disneyland, such that those weird, tacky transitions aren't that bad. In fact, maybe that's one of the reasons that nothing we've talked about today, in my mind, is slightly appealing. Like, none of this to me seems... It seems so weird and uncomfortable to me to move from those experiences to experiences, and, like, having that simulacrum and knowing that it's real, but convincing yourself for a moment that it's not, right? Like, do you think that a lot of this is also works because we're ready to convince ourselves that these transitions aren't as jarring as they actually are? And do we do that same thing in games? Do you think games makes it easier to experience this? Like, maybe I would have a good time now because I have played more games since I went to Disneyland when I was a kid.
I mean, I definitely think that the worst time to go to Disneyland is probably the last time you went to Disneyland. Like, you were, what, 16 or something like that?
15,
you said?
16.
So I think that's 14, probably... maybe? I feel like 13 to... you know, 18 or 20 or whatever is probably the worst time to go to Disneyland.
You're too young for kid stuff, but not old enough to appreciate, like...
And you're not old enough to appreciate the, like, engineering marvel that is Disneyland.
Right.
You know, like, the fact that all of this stuff works, and the fact that, like, you actually can't see the jungle from Tomorrowland is something that doesn't really click in your teenage mind. But it's something that does click in your childhood mind, because... you know, the division between fantasy and reality is so thinner.
Right, because you're a kid.
Yeah. And so, but, you know, once you, and, like, people like us who are always looking at video games, I think you get a lot out of it, because you're like, oh, this is how you create something that is clearly not real, but does as much as humanly possible to make it easy for you to believe.
Right.
You know, like, something like, one of the reasons I like Red Dead so much is that it does so much work to make it easy to suspend disbelief.
Yes, you know? That's true.
And I think that's what you appreciate, again, going back to Disneyland in your 30s, where it's like, oh, here's all these little tricks that they're doing. Like, you notice in, like, I actually really liked the Cars Land area in California Adventure, because there's this huge, they pattern it after, so in Cars, they don't call it Monument Valley like in Utah. They call it Ornament Valley.
Okay.
And so it's like the, you know, the huge rock structures in Utah that you see in all the westerns.
Yeah.
And they pattern it in such a way that, like, the highway's behind it.
Right.
But you have no idea that the freeway's back there, because the way that they've built up the fake rocks makes it look like those rocks are a million miles away. Like, they paint them differently to make it look hazy, like you're looking at something from far away.
Yeah. So there's an optical illusion to give you a sense of depth that isn't actually there.
There's a lot of practical effects. Like, even the castle itself, or what is it? Is it Snow Sleeping White Beauty's or Sleeping castle? Beauty? Yeah, Sleeping Beauty. It's created in such a way that the top of it is kind of artificially smaller than it actually should be, and it makes it seem taller.
Yeah, this is why sculptures some sculptures that we see in museums look like they've got enormous hands and things like that.
Yeah.
Because they were actually meant to be viewed while on a large column to make them look human size, whereas down on our angle, they don't look human at all.
And so it's one of those things that we always kind of, I think, it's like in video games where in any open world game, if you get too close to like a door or something, it's like, wait, this door is not the right size.
Yeah.
You know, like this door is enormous. What is going on? But like it's designed in such a way to make it seem like it's the right size from far away.
Right.
Or from when you're quickly passing it. You know, things need to be instantly readable. Like when you're zipping through the Matterhorn, you need to instantly be able to recognize in the split second that you're outside of the mountain,
right?
Okay, there's Toontown, there's Tomorrowland. I can see the whole thing, you know?
Yeah, which is, in a weird way, it's less about lying to the viewer and more about presenting to the viewer what they expect to see given those particular conditions.
Yep, yeah. And I think that's where, you know, part of the open world game experience, like, I think what separates the really good ones from the bad ones is that they're able to do things like that.
Yeah.
You know, they're able to, like, selectively manipulate either, you know, proportions or physics or whatever. Like, you can make the biggest game in the world and it still doesn't feel right, even if it's to scale.
Yep, yeah.
And I think that's the thing that you appreciate more once you have a sense of just how the world works from a physical perspective.
Right.
And so that's why adults are kind of like blown away by Disneyland, because it's such a crazy engineering thing.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, that being said, are there things that, you know, you're talking about the app.
Yes.
Quests? Like, what would you add? Like, what do you think Disneyland could use from video games?
So that's one of the things that really shocked me about Disneyland was how, what I interpreted as how far behind they were. So Disneyland has never been more popular. Like, we were, Hannah was doing a bunch of research, and like, there's never been more people going to Disneyland. And
on
a
daily basis.
Yeah, and I can attest to that. Like, I've been to Disneyland a handful of times in my life, and this was by far the craziest. Like, there was just massive amounts of people.
Yeah.
To the point where some rides, this is actually a game design thing. So, like, some rides almost instantly get to 45 minute wait time, hour wait time, hour and a half wait time,
mm-hmm.
2 hours almost. Like, I mean,
still nothing on Gamescom.
I mean, it kind of feels like that. Like, it feels like a convention. And so they've done many things to try to combat this, like from a design perspective.
Right.
They have these things called fast passes, where instead of waiting in line, you go up to a kiosk and get a schedule. Like, you can come back here between the hours of 1 p.m. and 2 p.m. and instantly skip 75% of the line. Okay. But you have to come back at this point in time.
Right. So it's basically trying to schedule people ahead of time, the way you might book a flight.
Yep. And you can have like two fast passes at once, but only two. And you can't get another one until one of them expires.
Right. And you can't get a fast pass for the same time you've already booked another adventure.
Right. Well, potentially you could, because each fast pass counts for different times.
Okay.
But you wouldn't really want to necessarily chance that, because if you miss your window, they'll turn you away.
Right.
And then you're back in the plea blind, as I like to call it. There is nothing more satisfying than being in the fast pass line and walking by all of the chumps that are in the regular line.
Right. Right.
They also have single rider lines.
Okay.
Where if you don't care about being in the same car as your companion, you can just go in the single rider line.
Right. So if you're like a loser and you have no friends, Disneyland is the place to be.
Well, that's how Hannah and I did the Cars ride. The Cars ride was probably an hour wait. Yeah. We're like, oh, let's try the single rider. We just walked on.
I mean, what is a single rider doesn't matter, right? Because it's not like you're talking to, I mean, I guess theoretically.
Well, I mean, the whole point is that, like, and sometimes people are locked into riding with their family because they have children.
Right.
You have to ride with your kid.
Don't have kids.
And so
go
you
to Disneyland.
I mean, like, being childless in Disneyland is a crazy experience. And so they combat it that way. The lines themselves are designed in a way to make things more interesting when you're standing in there for 45 minutes.
Right, so you're looking at stuff.
Yeah.
There's, like, animatronics and things.
Yeah. I mean, the way that they snake the lines around is also a very interesting thing, because you can't really see how long the line is when you're standing in it, because it would be too depressing to know how long the line is.
Oh, interesting.
So there's a lot of blind corners in the lines, especially in the newer rides.
Do they give you a signpost that's like 1 hour from this point?
They say, before you enter the line.
This is great. So basically, you can know how long it lasts,
but
that doesn't really hit you until you see the massive people
exactly.
in front of you.
Yeah, they're like, okay, it's from this point, it's 45 minutes. But when you're in the line, they snake the line in such a way that you can't really see the total extent of the line because you're walking through this built-up environment. It's like, especially like Indiana Jones is the classic version here, where it's like you're walking through an excavation. And so here's like Sulla's, you know, encampment, and here are some spikes that killed someone, and here's a skeleton hanging from the thing. So like you're going through this mini experience that is setting you up for the broader ride, right, and also hiding the fact they're basically hiding load times.
Yeah,
like it is it is the elevator in Mass Effect.
I see. Yeah,
like I mean, like they're
people hated that elevator.
I mean, people hate those lines. Let me tell you, like those kids are not happy. But I mean, I think video games can learn a lot from what they have done, because it's basically dealing with constraints. Mm-hmm. It's dealing with resource constraints. It's not CPU constraints, it's physical space, but it's the same thing. It's a resource constraint.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, some of the slickest things that video games have started doing in the recent years is loading games while cutscenes are playing.
Mm.
So it's kind of distracting you from it.
Yeah.
Or, the elevator is like an extreme sequence in Mass Effect, but like it is, there's a narrative justification for why you're waiting.
Yeah, you know, like to that end, they probably should start putting in pseudo missions, because that's a really good way of funneling people to specific locations.
Yep.
Like when I was a kid, I didn't like rides, so I sort of needed something to do, and one of the goals that I had was getting the autographs of fictional people around Disneyland.
Yeah.
And each of them had like unique different signatures, so at the time I thought that was kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would send me around. Like there would be times where I know, Minnie Mouse will probably be here, or Eeyore is going to be here at about 1:30.
Yep.
So I'll come around then, right? You could set up missions in the park. Oh, now this is a crazy idea. Mm. You could set up missions in the park based upon density of people using the app to get people to leave high density areas to low density areas.
Yep. Yep. And that is one of the things where I think they're behind, because they do that, but in a very physical way. Like they alter the walking paths in the park to try to funnel people in various ways.
Right.
Especially if there's a parade coming or whatever, like they rope off certain areas to like make sure to kind of push people to different areas.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're in line, I was kind of shocked that while I was waiting for Cars, I wasn't on my phone playing a Cars mini game.
Right.
Or like while I was in the line for Space Mountain or Star Tours, I wasn't then playing a mini game that got me points that I can then trade in for pins. And maybe I don't have enough points for a pin. How about a dollar or two to get more points? Then you can get another pin, right? Like the gamification.
You're a maniacal genius.
Like if you look at it from like Mr. Businessman was having a fucking field day with this, because it's like they could gamify the lines and gamify the experience so much. And it would both...
You realize I have to destroy this podcast
now. Yeah. Like, but that's the thing. Like, they must know this. They just must move slowly.
That's,
you know?
Yeah, that's certainly true.
Like, I mean, the amount of stuff that you could do, like, you could have QR codes in the line where you scan something and all of a sudden Buzz Lightyear pops onto the phone screen. You know what I mean? There's so many things that you can do with smartphones.
I mean, you could have push notifications that's like, hey, the single line over here is moving extra fast. They come now.
Yeah. Or, you know, like what you were saying is like, you know, Mickey's parade is about to start, you know, in Fantasyland.
Right. And if you check in over here, then
So,
and the fact that you can strategically push those based upon GPS notifications means you could probably engineer the movement of people in the park extremely well.
Yeah, and I think that's something that I imagine is on a whiteboard somewhere, like for all of these people. But like, it's in some ways, it's still a very like old school feeling thing where they haven't quite gotten to the point where like it's shocking to me that there's no like meta game on top of all of these rides.
Okay, you know? one more question for you. Do you think that the placement of like power ups and save points and all that in video games, does that correlate to the location of food and beverage locations in the park? Like what are the distances?
Oh yeah.
Those must be super strategically placed as right?
Yeah. I mean, it's strategically placed.
Like, can I get a corn dog anywhere? Is it only?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, like so. There's churros everywhere.
I love park food, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, and it's everywhere. Like, we knew, like, we were in Tomorrowland looking at the churros, and we're like, okay, maybe we want to go to Adventureland because they have some kind of like barbecue thing over there.
Barbecue churros.
Yeah, and then Han was like, nah, I don't really care about that. But now we're like all around the other side of the park. There are a million people in between Tomorrowland and Adventureland. no worries, let's just loop around to Adventureland where they also have a churro stand over here.
Okay.
You know, so it's right. like there are things that are scattered throughout the park that are just far enough away so that you can't see them. It's not like you can stand on a corner and see like five Starbucks like you can in the city.
Yeah.
But if you walk just a little bit, you will be able to find that same thing.
Interesting.
Or you'll be able to find a bathroom. But you won't be able to see the bathroom too much because they don't want to like put a bathroom right front and center on Main Street. But they need to be able to guide you to it. There's
just one huge trough in the center of Disneyland. Everyone uses.
It's with that type of stuff, it is like the fine line of hiding it enough, but still guiding people towards it.
Yeah.
Or like after you get out of Star Tours, there are so many drinking fountains because it's kind of a nauseating ride. Like you're wearing 3D glasses, you're bouncing around all the time. Mm-hmm. The heavy duty rides and the long wait rides, there are more water fountains.
God, that's nuts.
Yeah.
It's like in video games where you're pursuing a homeostatic system in which the player is topped off when they need to be topped off.
Yep.
It's functionally the same thing, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, they don't ever want you to get far enough away, you know, to feel like...
To question your spending of money here.
Oh, I mean, the money thing is crazy. Like, you should never be, you know, like, Disney never wants you to be away from a place you can spend money.
Right.
Which, again, is why I'm surprised that they haven't gone... You know, ham on the
ham.
I did have a God. What did we have? It was the it was in New Orleans Square. It's the
like a turkey leg.
No, they have the turkey legs. Actually, one of the Jambalaya. Things where they only have one of them. I think there's only one turkey leg stand in the entire park.
Ooh.
Monte Cristo.
Oh yeah, I had a Monte Cristo at a breakfast joint here lately. Breakfast break on the Experience Points podcast.
Yeah, I mean they have those...
Love me a Monte Cristo, powdered sugar.
Oh yeah, ham and cheese inside of it and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you can make a reservation, but you know why can't I be in line and be like, man, you know what would make this line go faster? A churro.
I mean, a churro makes anything go faster. It's basically time travel.
Especially in my life as it slips by. I mean, like I don't know. Why they have, because like Starbucks does this, you can like order a Starbucks and then pick it up, you know, when you go there. I don't know why, like, you can't just say, hey, bring me a lemonade or whatever, I'll pay for it, you have my credit card on file.
I mean, maybe it does go back to the movement of people though, right? If people are busy getting food, they're not busy waiting, lengthening the line.
Yeah, that's true. They get out if they want.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that is that it would remind you a lot if you went again was something like BioShock.
all the splicers around the park.
I mean, there is a couple. I mean, Andrew Ryan is a kind of Walt Disney-esque figure. Even the way they modeled him, like the look of him, he kind of looks like Walt Disney,
right.
Which is not, I highly doubt, is a coincidence. But the way that a guided experience works, like when you first are, you know, listening to that, to the, you know, is a man not entitled speech, is very much a theme park ride. Mm-hmm. Like it's showing you a specific thing. Yeah. The models are set up in
I mean, the
a
way that the
way.
Biosphere like walks you through, like here's the area you'll go later.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, Half-Life was such a seminal moment because you are on that, the tram ride or whatever on Half-Life at the very beginning. That's just a theme park ride, you know? Right. But they do it in such a way that it makes you feel like you're the only one having this experience.
Right.
Like we were talking about before the podcast where like the rides themselves are structured in such a way that unless they very explicitly want you to, it's not very easy to see other cars on the track,
right.
You know? And the way that all the animatronics have to reset after every stage is scheduled in such a way that you never see it.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of that stuff in video games is like, you have to be very careful about how you do scripted sequences. Cause like, you know, if the player runs a little bit too fast, then you see someone, you know, just kind of standing there blankly until the script starts,
right.
You know,
right.
All of that stuff is like the precursor to all this shit, like all the problems that we're trying to solve with like kind of story driven, narrative driven things are very much theme park problems. Like, right. They're not movie problems. They're theme park problems because there is a level of interactivity with them.
Yeah, exactly. Wow.
It's nuts.
Yeah, that makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah, it is. It's, I mean, I would say it is exceedingly expensive. So it's like, it's hard. Oh, you have to go. Like, I get it. If you have a chance to go, you certainly should.
Especially with that point of view, right?
Yeah.
Looking at the park with that perspective.
Yeah. I mean, it is.
Here's the thing. I hate groups of people.
Oof.
So
Friday would have been rough.
Yeah.
I will say, pro tip, go very early in the morning because.
Does the park ever close? Like, they're not open at 4 a.m, right?
No.
3 a.m. Can I sneak in?
No.
God, you probably get
arrested. The other thing, yeah. Like,
they
Disneyland
probably
shoot
on site.
Disneyland, like, there are cameras everywhere, but they're all hidden. So
there's so much stuff there. Yeah, the camera aspect.
We on the last day we went, we were there at like 8 a.m. and left at midnight. And then Downtown Disney doesn't close to like 2 or something. So there's like a handful of hours where they have to like do all the maintenance and stuff. And I guess that all happens in between like midnight and 8 a.m.
The night owl shift.
You know?
Wow.
Well, actually, no, it happens probably a little bit earlier because you can get into the park early if you
pay.
It
would be interesting to see what the park is like. Like taking a tour of the park when no one is there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wonder if some of that stuff fades, right? Like mm-hmm. if some of the illusion passes because people are there to make it pass.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you
know. It's like what exploring a city without any NPCs in it.
Yeah, I think. Because when we first went, we just walked on to rides. Like, I mean, it was like 8 a.m. You know, people with kids were still trying to get them out the door. you know, the unruly teens were still sleeping. So, like, we just went super early and, you know, walked on to Pirates in like 5 minutes. Right. So it's like there it's kind of cool because you do get to see it more empty and you see like, okay, here's how the traffic actually works. And then you get to see it under load.
Yeah.
You know, like afterwards, yeah. Like, oh, okay, I know why this circle is here.
It's
because now there's 5,000 people standing.
It's the stress
in it.
Test. It's yeah, like moving from closed beta to open beta.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, it's just kind of a crazy thing to see fill up.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think like every 10 years or so is like an interesting thing. It's kind of like replaying a game.
Yeah.
You know, it makes me want to replay. Like something like Red Dead to kind of look at it again.
Well, I think
you know?
It's kind of a fascinating space too, just because it has to be reactive, but can't be too reactive
yeah.
to the entertainment world, right?
Yeah.
Like A Bug's Life still has a section there,
mm-hmm.
even though that movie came out over a decade ago
yeah.
at this point, I think.
Yep.
But there's also now the Star Wars space has to grow bigger because that franchise is back in a really big way.
Yep.
Cars is there, but is there going to be another Cars movie anytime soon?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how much longer can that stay relevant?
Well, I mean, Cars is like a money machine. They made 2 Cars movies.
When
like...
is the Twilight section going to be added? When is 50 Shades of Grey adult Disney theme park going to be added?
Yeah, that's when Disneyland gets real spooky on Halloween.
You know, alternatively, when are we going to see actual video game franchise sections added?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have Indiana Jones. I could see it feasible that there's a Lara Croft section.
Yeah.
Or there's an Uncharted section.
Yeah. Well, Lara Croft and Indy are 2 watered down Indiana Joneses, but
that's
it would be
true.
More interesting to see something like actual Super Mario.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Well,
you have to go to Japan for that, I guess.
I mean, like, well, yeah, maybe Japan Disney will have,
or,
like...
Or, you know, like a Pikachu section, right?
Yeah, like...
Pokemon.
I think, and some of that stuff, and, you know, just Disney's growth over the years, like, now, in addition to sitting around and getting your picture taken with Mickey, there's a huge line to get your picture taken with Thor.
Right.
You know, like, now, like, because there's just so much more stuff, so it's like, there will always be more things, like... kind of encompassed in it, but they also have to fit in. Like, where do you put Thor? Like, where do you think Thor was?
Oh man!
Like, what land do you think Thor?
Map?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, he's definitely in Disneyland proper. I'm
he
gonna
was,
say.
Yeah, you're right. That was good because he was not in California Adventure.
Yeah, even though he is from California, little known fact, yeah. Asgard is just above Tahoe. I'm gonna say Tomorrowland.
He was in Tomorrowland.
Yeah.
But like,
I mean, he's from this future, you know, Asgard.
Or maybe
space.
He's in the distant past. I don't know. Like, those
That's
guys
true.
Have been around forever. So it's like, how do you fold those things into the fiction?
Were all of Marvel characters in Tomorrowland? Was the Hulk, like, running around?
Smashing?
Or, like, Gambit is in, like, the New Orleans section because he's Cajun?
Oh, no, because 20th Century Fox still owns X-Men, my
oh,
friend.
Oh, that's true.
yeah, and so, like... One of the things that I think they're going to do with Star Wars is like break it out of Tomorrowland.
Right.
They're just going to have Star Wars land.
Yeah. I mean, it's just too big. It
yeah.
will be too big.
Yeah. So it's like, what are you going to do with all these things that maybe weren't there in the 50s and 60s and now you have to make sense of them? You
yeah.
know? It's freaking fascinating. It's a fascinating place. And I think if people looked at video games more
like...
It's the
best place on Earth, right?
It's the happiest place on Earth. I think if people looked at video games more like theme parks and or museums, it would actually be pretty instructive rather than like movies, films, even a play to a certain extent.
Yeah.
But plays are closer.
It's just so funny that we want to see it look like... We want to think about video games as theme parks in a way, but the theme park itself wants to not make it seem like a theme park, but like you are in the universe of that world.
Yeah.
Like there's an extra step, the theme park experience, in order to create the illusion of you being in a space that is not curated.
Well, and I think that's one of the just... That's one of
that
the things...
That is the Disney magic.
Well, it's one of the things that Disneyland is like unapologetic of, like, we're trying to simulate this in a magical way, whereas... Video games, oftentimes, I have the feeling like, oh...
I want to simulate it actually.
Well, we want to simulate... We're trying to be as realistic as possible, but we're having to make these compromises versus we need to simulate the perception and the feeling of something. Or it's like, oh, we just want this to be like Disneyland. And then you're like doing a simulation of a simulation.
Yeah.
You know? I think that's, you know... I think if you're confident enough to be slightly fantastical... about your open world rather than being like really strict about modeling every single little thing, you can get the spirit of something without having to get bogged down.
Which so put Mickey Mouse in every video game is what you're saying.
I mean, I gotta get my, what's it? Disney Infinity. Like, I mean, the amount of merchandise is nuts.
Yeah.
Not as much like video game stuff as I would have expected. But it's all there.
Yeah.
Like the moment that they unleash smartphones on that place, it's going to be insanity.
Yeah. You know? I wonder if that will actually make traversal harder though, as people are bumping into each other while they're looking at their phones.
They've banned selfie sticks.
Oh, really?
You cannot take selfie sticks into Disneyland.
Thank God.
I saw, because they search, they do a bag search, a quick bag
screen.
And
they take
your
shit?
I saw people, like Disneyland employees with like handfuls of selfie sticks.
That's crazy.
Because their explanation is that it's dangerous.
Sure.
Because if you're on a ride and you're holding up a selfie stick, you're going to get it hooked on something.
Oh, yeah.
And rip your arm off.
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, yeah. It's happened dozens of times.
I mean, like, and that's actually something in the lines. Like, the line behavior has changed because of phones. There will be people looking at their phones in line, and all of a sudden the line will move really fast for a second. And it's like, oh, someone was looking at their phone, and now they stopped.
And caught up.
Yeah, exactly.
That's,
like,
yeah.
Yes, but I mean, the moment that they start gamifying all of those lines, like, that's going to be nuts.
Yep.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. Like, you could make an entire video game out of Disneyland, but have it.
It'll be an Oculus Rift game. And you just experience it in real time.
That's one thing that I didn't even get into, but, like, how VR is going to change all of this stuff. Because it could, you know? Like, we put on 3D glasses for a handful of these rides.
I mean, it weirds me out that Disneyland can exist. Like, you can't just make a theme park. If I just made a theme park, I doubt people would go. You
know? I'd go. Is it under the is it under the waves?
Yeah, it's just in my backyard, actually. There's, like, nothing. There's no IPs, because that's all illegal. It's all things from my imagination.
Who's Mackie Mouse?
George, this is just a churro truck. I like churros. What's the problem?
Oh, man. $12. Well, I'm here, I guess.
There's an app you could download, though.
All right. Well, that's my report from Disneyland. I'd be interested to hear if anyone else has made a recent trip, because I feel it was pretty eye-opening. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And ExperiencePoints.net is our churro truck of the internet. All of our posts you can find up there. We're also at Pop Matters.
Yep.
Nice to throw that one out now and again.
Yep.
And if you want to give us a churro ourselves, I guess. A churro.
Oh, yeah.
Internet churro.
Hey. Those $7 churros don't...
Are they $7?
No, I think they're $4.25.
That's a little pricey.
Yeah.
For one churro?
One churro.
That's fucking bullshit.
Is that churro sprinkled with magic?
There's a place in Oakland that injects... Oh, no, it's in Los Angeles. It injects churros with, like, cream and stuff. Amazing.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this in Los Angeles, find it and go to it.
If you're listening to this in Los Angeles, stop listening.
Stop. Go. Yeah. Yeah, leave us a star rating, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Until next week, thank you for listening. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Oh, Mr. Businessman.
Every time.